We've been told for years that the property bubble is going to burst, but every time we look for that slowdown, the Real Estate Guide gleefully shows that prices have risen yet again. And the building industry is right on top of that, throwing up apartment blocks with incredible speed. So they're getting faster to build, but are those apartments getting better? Are they more pleasant to live in? Are they energy efficient and environmentally friendly? Will they last 200 years or will they be torn down again in 50? We're having a little bit of a look at the way Australia is building its future this hour on National Drive. Steve Chandler is CEO of the Lefter Group of Companies, who are property developers. Steve, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Joel. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Are we building better or are we just building cheaper now?
Well, I don't think we're building better than we were four decades ago. Are we building cheaper? Well, I don't think so either. So I think it's sort of we're not doing either. It's a very interesting scenario when you look back over time and see what we used to do, you know, 40 years ago compared to what we're doing now. That, you know, technology is a wonderful thing, but I sometimes, as an older person in the industry, scratch my head and say, geez, you know, has technology really helped us?
What has technology done in that 40 years? How has it changed the way things are built?
I think we've got a lot more, we've definitely got a lot more different types of building techniques, a lot of different products. It's sort of like, I came into the industry in 1980, and when I came into the industry, there was this new thing that was like an incredible product, and it's like, God, you got to use it because it solves everything, and it's called silicon. And it was like, wow, what is this stuff? And before silicon, we used to have to use particular, you know, construction techniques to stop water from getting into a building or getting out of a bathroom. And now we've sort of gone down this path of, you know, these magic, in inverted commas, products to, you know, make it easier and faster to build, but they're not really products that have sort of made our buildings better. They sort of don't have the longevity that the old buildings used to have. You know, you look around most of our older cities and you see these apartment blocks and houses that were built in the, you know, 1940s, 50s and 60s, and they're still there. They still function well. They're thermally inefficient, but from a perspective of they had some a real how would I describe it? A design philosophy around them. Nowadays, we're building, for example, in housing, we're building houses that don't have eaves on them because, look, they look good, but it's okay. We don't have to worry about the sun beating in on the into the windows that aren't in the shade anymore because we've got air conditioning systems that can cool the inside of a house. So technology has really sort of hurt our basic design philosophy of little things like shading the window with an eave on your house to stop the summer sun from coming in and making it hot inside. Little things like that, you just start rolling them out one after the other, and there's just a plethora of them.
How many buildings are we making that are actually truly environmentally friendly in that they are built to have shade in the right place, they are facing the right direction, they do have the thickness of wall needed, all that sort of thing, so that we don't need to rely so much on electrical power to cool and heat our houses?
Yeah, very few, Joel. It's sad, actually, when you think about it. The almighty dollar has driven everything. And it comes down to, you know, people say, you know, it might be the builder and the developer, etc. But when you bring it right back to the individual and you look at a house, when we do a renovation on a house, we want to do it for the cheapest possible price, you know, within our budget and those type of things. And we want to get the biggest bang for our buck. Unfortunately, when we do that, we don't achieve anything, you know, that really helps us on the climate change side of things. It just makes it a bigger house that needs more cooling and heating. We don't build a smaller, instead of getting, like for example, we want to put an extra room on, we do an extra 30 square metre room. Instead, why don't we do an extra 25 square metres, and that additional cost that would have gone into the 5 square metres bigger room, spend that on a thermal efficient design of that 25 square metres. Now, the cost is going to be the same overall. Yes, you're going to have a smaller room, but you'll be able to design it properly to minimise that requirement for that, you know, big air conditioning system, or to actually need an air conditioning system. And that's one of the issues that we have, is that we're designing for what people want, not what they need, if that makes sense. You know, there's a big difference between what we want and what we need. And in development, we always sort of look at what is going to sell the fastest. And if someone wants a really big apartment, then we're going to build them a really big apartment. If it needs to have, you know, big glass openings, which let in a huge amount of heat, then, okay, we'll give them huge windows, because that's what people want. Problem is, that drives the air conditioning systems that have to go into the inside of the building, because in summer they're too hot and in winter they're too cold. So we're our own worst enemy when it comes to that. And whilst people say we want those large windows, well, developers are going to do it. And the builders, they only do what the developer says. So it's sort of this catch-22 where everybody is actually in this cycle, and we're all responsible for what we're actually doing. Building codes, and I'm sort of changing the subject here, but building codes are the thing that really will drive what we're actually going to do. In many states around Australia, they've over the last sort of 10 years, there's been apartment design guides come into place. And what these apartment design guides try to do is control or set minimum standards for the design of apartments. And that's great. However, they too are not perfect. And if government wants to try and help control things like reducing energy consumption, you can do that through these apartment design guides. So if the apartment design guides say you can't have these whopping great big windows that face north and let all the sun in, then developers won't do it, because the planning constraints will be there to prevent it from happening. But that might not be what people want. And then we've got this problem of legislation says you must do this, and the people are saying, well, we're not going to buy it if you do that. Suddenly we've got a political problem, and then votes count, and politicians go down the path of, well, we're going to do what gets us the votes.
You are listening to ABC Radio. My name is Joel Reinberger. Steve Chandler's with us. He's CEO of the Lefter Group of Companies, who are property developers. And we're talking about the issues we have with the design, particularly of apartment and housing blocks as they go up in cities and towns around Australia. At the worst end of the scale here, Steve, if you buy an apartment, you buy a brand new apartment off the plan, and it's not up to scratch, you know, you've got a bad quality build, there's cracks appearing. I mean, you get a 3-year warranty on an electric fry pan in Australia, but you get nothing on $500,000 apartment. There is no way to actually come back at the builder and get that sorted. What can be done about that?
It's interesting. Every state has its own laws around how building and development occurs. Generally, most states have a what could fundamentally be called a home warranty insurance, home warranty insurance, or a requirement for builders to warrant their construction for a certain period of time. So we call that a statutory warranty. So that's required under state-based legislation. A developer in some states, the developer sells the apartment to the consumer. So the consumer buys off the developer. So there's a contract between the two of them. The developer then generally, those off the plan sales contracts, When you settle, you get a 3 month defects period from the developer, or give or take, but generally it's 3 months. Then your various state or territory, wherever you live, has a statutory warranty that the builder must provide. In some states, the statutory warranty says that if the builder was to go bust, then the developer is deemed to be the builder in those circumstances, and then the developer is expected to step in and support that, you know, that property owner. The difficulty that we have, we've got this massive disconnect between state and federal legislation where under corporations law, a builder or a developer can actually roll their business over. So they can actually wind up their business and go broke, or send that company into liquidation without going broke as such. They can send it into liquidation, and that would then leave the property owner with a problem, which is you can't go to the builder because the builder's wound up his company and, you know, that's finished. And you can't go to the developer because the developer's wound up his company because that development is finished, and you're gone. So really what we've got to do is find a way to get a connection between federally based corporations law and whatever the state-based legislation is around, you know, warranties for the construction of the building. Whilst there's that disconnect, it's automatic that a builder or a developer is going to shut down a particular business after a period of time. So in the development game, what we do is we might have we'd start a subsidiary business to actually do a development. When that development is finished, you know, a couple of years after completion, that company then gets wound up and it's gone. Now, if the builder goes broke after that, then the homeowner can't come back to anybody because the development entity is gone. So it's a real problem from that perspective. So somehow there needs to be some connection between state-based requirements and federal.
Perhaps we need to actually make the officers illegal. of that company personally responsible, as opposed to the legal fiction of the sub-company they've created being responsible for it.
Yeah, but this is where we're going to start talking a little bit of legal, and we might have to step away from this in a minute. But what happens is that winding up these companies is perfectly legal, and from that perspective, if a company director is winding up a company, you know, a couple of years after the development's finished, if they've done that in compliance with the requirements of corporations law, the comeback is very, very difficult.
Mm.
So again, that makes it really hard for the homeowner. So this disconnect really needs to be sorted out, because it is an issue, and it definitely needs some really smart minds to be applied to it to stop what is currently happening. In Sydney, just recently, we've had two builders, large-scale builders, their two subsidiary companies have actually, you know, gone into liquidation in the last couple of months. And, you know, reputedly there's $30 million worth of defects outstanding. So those are the sorts of things that you've got to say, well, the homeowners are getting left in the lurch for this.
Yeah, absolutely.
What can we do about it?
Steve Chandler, fascinating to talk to you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us, Joel.
Steve Chandler is CEO of the Lefta Group of Companies, having a bit of a look at some of the issues around construction happening, especially in our big cities at the moment.